I'm going to share my screen too, Tanya, in just a minute. So I don't know. Can I? Oh, okay. You need to take your screen down. Got it. Good. Welcome. I'm going to share in just a minute. Okay. Welcome everybody to our first forum, our joint forum, Making Magic Happen with the Org Design Forum and the Business Agility Community. I am so excited to bring these two communities together because I think there's so much synergy. So welcome. And if you're here, then I assume that you're part of either the Org Design community, the Business Agility community, or both. And we're really looking at, if you think of a Venn diagram, that space where we meet, that's the community that we're launching here and creating, because I think there's a lot of opportunity. But I'm going to share my screen for just a second with you so you can kind of see what we're thinking in terms of the journey for this group. And I'm not going to talk very long because I'm going to hand it off to some speakers in just a minute. But if you think, you know, the purpose of this community is to compound the impact of both of the communities. Today, we're just starting out. So it's really just about share and learn and get to know each other. And then we can really move into cross-pollinating and seeing what's possible, exploring the synergies. And then ultimately, we can create some new possibilities between the two communities. So that's the idea of the journey, but we're just starting out here. So we're just going to do some share and learn today. I'm going to stop sharing for a second. And so the way that this is going to work today is we're going to have a bunch of speakers. So three speakers from the Agile community, three speakers from the Org Design community. Actually, some of those speakers, there's crossover, but that's the idea. And we'll do like a little bit of a Christmas carol thing here, where it's the Agile past, Agile present, Agile future, Org Design past, Org Design present, Org Design future. And we're kind of going to intersperse those to keep things moving. So once we hear just a little bit about how each of the communities have evolved, we'll do a panel where we'll have questions and answers and Q&A with the speakers. So we'll get to a whole bunch of stuff covered in a really short amount of time, and then we'll figure out where to take it from there. So with that, I just want to first extend a thank you to both the Agile, the Business Agility community, and the Org Design community groups for hosting this today and making this possible on really short notice. So this is so, so wonderful. So let's start out then with talking about org design. How did we get here? What the past is with Nuala Campany. Thank you, Nuala.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Okay, so come along, beautiful. Oh, that's better. All right, so you know, obviously org design is a huge field and it's not going to be possible to cover everything. So I apologize in advance for any and all omissions. But as I was thinking about this topic, I really had two questions in mind. What was kind of the intention behind the design work? Who is it for? And then I also tried to think about what are some of the themes that connect the sort of the field as it evolved. So starting out, you know, org design, obviously, it's not new. It has a long history. We can find examples in the Bible, military, early military and religious writings. But the beginnings of professional design really lie in the sort of late 19th century when industrialization created the need to look at businesses differently. So early work on organization structure brought together these three gentlemen, Taylor on work specialization, Fayol's ideas on chain of command and the differentiation between line and staff roles, and then Weber's theory of bureaucracy. So they all culminated in Taylor's 1911, The Principles of Scientific Management, in which he put forward a blueprint for efficient organizations and a scientific way for designing them. So the focus of the classic design approach grew out of Taylor's work and his colleagues' work. And the focus of the approach was really on an organization's structural characteristics, with org design primarily aimed at constructing a blueprint for the formal structures of the organization. So the division of labor into functions, the creation of hierarchical and lateral mechanisms to coordinate and integrate them. And the goal of designing that formal structure was really to control organization behavior. And the design process was really seen as a search process. You know, you start with the problem and then you end up with a design that solves the problem as optimally as possible. So Mintzberg's metaphor of the designer turning the knobs on a control panel really sums up the role of the designer in the classic design model. And it wasn't really until the 1930s that organization structures started to become more standard. And also as humans relations theory took hold, researchers began to think about an organizational structure that would allow for the needs, the knowledge, and sort of opinions of employees to be better recognized. And that really brings us to some limitations of the classical design model, which are really summarized here. In obviously time being limited, I'm just going to focus on the first couple. So, you know, while the success of an organization depends, it depends not just on the quality of its formal structure, but the maybe more importantly, informal structures and organization culture. And then secondly, in the classic approach, management designs and employees are being designed. Socio-technical systems design, as conceived by Tristan and Bamford and others, understood that better operational performance could be achieved by allowing those closest to the technology input into the design of the system and to exert control over the processes involved. So work systems were viewed as open systems and existing in a changing environment, hence requiring, you know, continuous redesign, necessitating that agility be built into the design of the organization. And this is really in sharp contrast to Taylor, because he specified that once complete, you know, a design should not be changed. And these criticisms led to a variety of alternative approaches influenced by theorists like McGregor, Argyris, Donshon, French and Bell in the field of organization development, you know, where they were interested in incorporating, in addition to sort of formal structures, more participative processes, looking at informal structures and really thinking about the role of management as being, you know, to propagate a vision of the future and helping to sort of coach and motivate employees to solve their own problems. World War II kind of brought about some developments as well. This is where we start to see organizations becoming more complex. We also saw kind of some mathematical models coming in from the military, as well as the establishment of different schools of thought around organizations in academia, as people became really interested in studying organizations. The 1960s, this is a really important inflection point, I think, because prior to this, the question had really been, what's the best way to organize? And as I said, we see an inflection point first in the work of Harold Levitt, his chapter in Handbook of Organizations, that argued that structure, planning processes, information systems, and interpersonal relations all need to work together. And this was also echoed in Lawrence and Lodge's work, you know, who saw organizations as social systems, and that they need, and that choice of organization and people depends on strategy, as well as kind of the internal and external environment. So, you know, sort of this, the work of Lawrence and Lodge and Levitt, you know, led others to understanding that different strategies require different organizational models, and that organization designs that facilitate speed, variety, change, and integration can be a source of competitive advantage. Jay Galbraith's framework, his STAR model design framework, is probably one of the most famous of all of these design models. You know, it's the idea being that strategy is the starting point that establishes the structure of the organization, sets the framework for the other org design decisions around process, people, and rewards. And obviously, as the business environment has become more complex, this has increased the complexity of organization designs. Added to this, you know, the speed of change has increased the need for organizations to be able to reconfigure aspects of their design to take advantage of different market opportunities, which really brings us to the field today. All right, and I will pause there and stop sharing.
Thank you, Nuala. That was a great foundation for us of you know, how org design got to where it is today. And I'm going to hand it now to Diana Larson, who's going to, in contrast, tell us, how did Agile get to where it is today?
Well, everything that Nuala just told you is part of the roots of Agile movement. The everything through the 60s, all of that is contributing to what became Agile. And I would say that the thing that got added in the 70s and 80s was Japanese management. And the idea of quality circles and many of the ideas that came out of that whole movement, the total quality movement, the awareness that customer satisfaction might be a thing we want to pay attention to, and so on. So all of that organization development, organization design, management theory background, of course, all of the people who were the signers of the Agile Manifesto, that happened in 2001, they all began their careers in the 70s and 80s and 90s in organizations who were influenced by all of that prior history. To that, they added the technology ideas from Japanese management and from the things that were happening in Silicon Valley and many of the trends that were happening there and the capabilities that the new technologies were bringing on board for people to get together. The other thing that happened was that software had begun having a role, not just the hardware of computers, but software began having a role starting really very early on in the 60s and even in World War II with Grace Hopper and the big machines there and so on, until by the early 70s, there was a gentleman named Winston Royce who wrote a paper talking about some of the ways to organize the software development life cycle. And in that paper, he described something that he called the cascade, which became to be known as the waterfall process. First, we decide what we want to build. Then we figure out what that is going to need to look like. And then we figure out all the tools and technologies that that's going to need. And then we talk to our customers and we make sure that they have nailed down everything they want. And then we hand it over to the developers and they take a couple of years and they build it. And then on the other end, we hand it back to the customers and the customers say, this isn't what I want at all. And that he actually wrote in his paper that it was a terrible way to do software development. But the interesting thing was it had such a lovely graphic with it that it just got adopted all over the place, and particularly by the federal government and folks like that and the military. So by the time of the mid to late 90s, a number of forward thinkers in the software development world were saying, you know, this doesn't work at all. And there were a lot of reports coming out by the research associations saying, you know, most of the software projects that we see, it was all project-based then, all of the projects that we see are are failures. They're not coming in under budget. They're not delivering what the customers want, so on, so forth. So this group of people who were observing that and who were mostly software developers themselves or executives in software development, each were beginning to develop their own ideas for how this might be done differently. And then we got extreme programming and Scrum and a number of other, those are probably the most familiar ones, but there were a number of other approaches. And they start being called lightweight methods, because they didn't have the heavy bureaucracy associated with them that the waterfall methodologies had. And they decided that maybe being called lightweight wasn't in their best interest. So they had a series of meetings and got together and came up with this term, Agile. And they wrote a manifesto. And if you've not seen it, if you go to agilemanifesto.org, that is the genesis of this thing that we call Agile software development. And out of that, a number of things emerged. The Agile Alliance as an umbrella trade association. I was on the board for the Agile Alliance for quite a number of years and an officer and on the board for a while. And the Scrum Alliance came on to really promote just that one stream of Agile. And they did a great job of that around figuring out that certifications were something that people wanted. And so that brings us to now. And there have been since the manifesto, there have been new practices and new things coming along. But I think some of our other speakers are going to tell us about that.
They are. Thank you so much, Diana, for giving us that evolution of Agile. And I love that you remind us that Agile was built on the evolution that was laid in place, the foundation laid in place by OrgDesign. So thank you so much. So now let's jump to the present. So let's hear about the OrgDesign and where we are with OrgDesign in the present from Jonathan Horniak. Jonathan.
Hey, and thank you everyone for letting me join. Jonathan Horniak. I'm out of Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm part of Cates Kessler, which is now a part of Accenture. So what I wanted to share with you today and building off of what Nola shared is, well, why are companies reaching out to us today for organizational design? A lot of times they have a really good strategy that they've put in place, except they're not really sure how to really make it come to life. So some of the examples that we see in some of the shifts in strategies might be that they're operating very regionally for like the past 15 years, but now they're starting to really explore more in APAC or in Europe. And they're realizing that we're no longer just a regional local business. How do we really establish ourselves as a true global organization? Also with that, it could be different business units, either through an acquisition or maybe they're spinning up their own innovation, but how closely aligned are those business units and how autonomously do we maybe want them to run? Is there really synergy from operating them more closely? Also, as we know, omni-channel marketing and commerce, customers, whether it's brick and mortar or online or on your phone or through Facebook marketing that you're getting, it should all be one omni-channel. But that requires organizations, whether it's sales, marketing, IT, as well as the strategy teams, to really be able to collaborate with one another through organizational design. Next is designing for customer-centric innovation. It's one thing to establish an innovation unit, you know, get a loft, get a barista, get a ping pong table, and you got innovation, but that's not enough. How are you able then to take that, to scale it? How integrated with your other products is it going to be? And then bring that to market. That takes organizational design, structure, and processes to make that happen. Also questioning then, what are the different accountabilities throughout that process? Digital is everywhere. Every client we speak with, I'm working with a legal function right now, and they say, we need digital capability. It doesn't matter. It's going to be there. But the question is, it's no longer just IT establishing the infrastructure. How are we going to operate it? How are we going to decide what our strategy is going to be for it? And then with that, are you going to establish a CDO who is going to own all digital underneath that person? Or is it going to be more distributed in different regions and each function having their own digital units? But we need to really work them as a network with one another to connect them. So there's different design choices to make that happen. Also, we're talking about Agile. We hear a lot now of shifting from that more waterfall and project-based to now having product management and Agile ways of working. And it's no longer just IT, it's the business and other units that are now part of this process to make that shift to a product-oriented organization. These next two, we'll go into a little bit more on the next page too, but how do we get more organizational agility? A lot of the leaders are coming to us to say, we need more speed. We're not going fast enough. Customer demands are changing. We need to be able to adapt to that. So how do we really empower those business units to be quicker and also to have a greater focus on customers? And lastly, how do we reduce unrewarded complexity and cost? What this is basically saying is jargon that we're too expensive. We have too many layers. As organizations get older, they start to maybe bring on acquisitions. They might also start to say, hey, we need a new leadership level for more focus in certain areas, but that starts to get expensive. So how do we really pull out some of that piping, make it more efficient, unlock that capability and capacity, and devote that then and move it over to really where we want to grow and where we want to scale for our organization. Over on the right, these are some within just the past few years of the organizations that we've worked with that had some of these challenges that were faced. So those last two I discussed really set the backdrop for this next slide, is that core tension that we're seeing in complex organizations on scale and agility. And if we go and speak with the CEOs we've spoken with, they don't say, hey, I just really want to scale my organization, or hey, I just need to get agile. They will tell us, I want to be both agile and I also want to have that cost saving from scale. But there's positives and negatives to both of these. So scaling is great because there's a focus on that enterprise. You're able to make some really big bets to make some big moves. You're also able to get more standardization and cost efficiencies the more you scale, and have harmonized processes that make it easier for people to work with the business if it's consistency across. Some examples of that is, you know, you set up a shared service unit. One organization I've been working with, a CPG, they said, well, we have our enabling functions of HR, IT, finance. A lot of these processes we have are really routine. Can we set up a global business service unit in a lower cost area that can provide that same service for us, as opposed to it sitting all within just the separate functions? Some of the downsides, it can get to be a little bit more bureaucratic sometimes if it's too center led. And it also gets further away from the customer, the more global. Rand you are. So that what brings us then to becoming more agile. How are we able to adapt to those customer differences? How can we really get some market speed and empower our leaders? The downside of agility, though, is sometimes to get that speed, you have to duplicate some resources. So instead of having sales at the center, you might decide, we're going to go ahead and put sales all on the ground in the local regions, banging on doors. That's great for that agility, but it also is going to have that trade-off of cost. So I'll leave there for how do we really design for both. That's establishing the operating model. And as we left off of for the past, using that STAR model of organizational design, of looking at structure, processes, rewards, and people to really make that come to life. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, John. That was great picture of agile, org design present. And I love the concept of these changing organizations kind of driving the need to change our org design. Okay, now let's hear about Agile Present. What's going on with business agility in our present day? So Peter Lamb is here to talk to us about that.
Hello everyone, my name's Peter Lamb from Melbourne, Australia. So I'm gonna talk about Agile today. I guess I'm gonna touch upon three things. So what is the state of Agile today? What are the problems it's solving? And what are the key, where is it starting to face certainly some challenges? So if we build on the thread from that Diane touched on earlier, these lightweight methods were designed to be more successful at delivering software with a real focus on customer value and effectiveness versus the efficiency push, right? And I guess, as Jonathan touched on in his presentation, there's more and more these digital products, and this whole digital shift has started to occur over the last decade or so. And as people start to move towards the digital products, it's the ability to deploy or change your product and respond to customer feedback starts to become increasingly the competitive advantage. I mean, there are certainly stories and comments where, if we use examples like Tesla, where people have complained about some of the issues about people using charging stations as parking lots. And within a couple of days, the billing model had changed, right? So it's the ability to respond and to change the products using the advantages of this technology and things like that at such speed, which some of the more, if you like, more traditional delivery methods struggle to keep up with, right? And I think what we see is that people see the speed that they can deliver, so they keep saying, well, we want more of that. So if we talk about where Agile is today, it's hard to say exactly how many people are going agile, but different stats will say somewhere between 70% or more of Fortune 500 companies are either trialing or going down the agile path. Now, if you wanted more information on this, absolutely push you to encourage you to look at the Business Agility website for a bit of an independent view rather than some of the publications you can see around. And now, with so many people going agile, looking at saying, hey, you know, these are new ways of delivering, new ways of working, you have a proliferation of coaches, proliferation of consultants, each with their very particular spin on what agile is, right? And every consulting firm has a particular bent on what agile is. And, you know, Diane touched upon in 2001, agile, if you like, was coined or framed in this agile manifesto and with essentially four statements and 12 principles, but we now have a proliferation of agile methods and techniques. They've just exploded, right? And it creates, you know, a lot of noise, if you like. Now, so what's the problem where, you know, it's solving? So agile was always designed as a delivery and particularly around software delivery. And I think if I quote Alistair Coburn, it talks about, you know, the science of getting humans to work better together. It's where he talks about and how to get really smart people to solve complex problems, right? But I think that if as Jonathan started to touch upon, as organizations grow, they build process and they build layers, right? And in many organizations, Agile's been used as a proxy to change the way that you're trying to run and manage your business, right? So rather than using a traditional delayering method or traditional sort of org design method, looking at spans and layers of people, they've said, hey, we've got 10 layers in our business, we'll go inverted commas agile, and we'll drop 3 to 4 layers from our organization. And that's a common pattern that we keep seeing at the moment. So the focus is on boxes, the focus is on people. And as a result, what they then to keep missing is the fact that even, you know, even if you do remove these layers, you still need to try and somehow reconnect all these different pieces together to deliver software that focuses on customer value, that's effective rather than efficient, right? And I guess as, you know, if I go back to, you know, back to those consultants that, you know, and coaches, Agile's appended the front end of every functional division. So we've got agile marketing, we've got agile management, we've got agile leadership, we've got agile, everything that you can put an agile on is a new tagline that they can put as a hashtag, put it on LinkedIn and sell it. But at the heart of what we talk about in many cases is that it's not about doing agile leadership, I guess, leadership concepts of setting direction, providing context and providing an environment to support your team has been around since about the 1500s, right? So agile is being used as a proxy, as an excuse to come in to sell services to change how organizations go. So one of the key challenges, and when we start to talk about the challenges in the third point that I wanted to touch upon, is that when you're touching upon half a dozen software delivery experts who can really distill what makes their lightweight delivery methods fantastic, and now you're transitioning this to millions of certificates of, you know, and the largest is probably Scrum. So millions of Scrum Masters have done a 2-day course. That obviously, there's only a level of information you can impart to someone over a 2-day. You can't distill 20 or 30 years of expertise into a 2-day course, right? And as a result, there's certainly a shift, if you like, in the quality of what Agile means. Going on a 2-day course is not, simply doesn't make you an expert. It simply gives you an entree to start the thought process, to start the understanding of your principles. So there is certainly a challenge between what good looks like when it comes certainly to Agile, and that commodification is a loss of knowledge, right? I think the second point that I start to drive into is that making change in corporations is hard. We're trying to deal with leaders and people who've worked for decades. We have decades of status and financial rewards and credibility, and we're trying to explain to them we need to change the way they work. And I think that's why there's a great opportunity for Agile and org design to work more closely together to create change for our people and therefore our customers. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Peter. I love that. I hadn't really thought about Agile being used as a proxy for change, and then also on the flip side, getting commoditized. So those are great things for us to be aware of. Okay, so that takes us through both org design and agile past and present. So now let's look into the future with Stu Winby, who's going to talk to us about the future of org design.
All right, thank you. I think, Tanya, we got a slide up there. back in 2015, 2016, one of the things that I noticed in the Silicon Valley, we live in Palo Alto, is that many of the companies actually in the Valley had fifth generation technology and third generation organization designs, where we had a technology lead and social system lag, even in the Valley. And if you went outside the Valley, you'd find even more of that going on. Around 2017, 2018, Bill Passmore, Sue Moorman, Chris Worley, and myself did an action research project that we called Star Labs that involved Google and Microsoft and Nike and Deutsche Bank and Shell and Magellan and Stanford Research and a whole bunch of folks. And we found digital technology having the innovation of digital technology was very, very rapid, but the innovation of organization design was slow. And it wasn't really keeping up with the changes in digital technology. And that has continued, and we got lots of data out of that. But one of the things that's very clear is that digital technology is shifting quickly. We're moving from agile project management to agile scaling, from DevOps and GitLab. GitLab is a new open platform, single application. It's being used in the Valley right now with Google and Facebook that will really revolutionize the whole DevOps kind of community. From platform structures to major cloud platforms involving machine learning and artificial components, fundamentally, software is eating the world. We're really rapidly becoming software organizations, which is why there's such a preoccupation with digital transformation. It seems like most companies today are going through some form of digital transformation. Now, what does that have to do with organization? Well, digital technology changes organization. It changes organization design. And in one way is that what digital technology, well, organization design is based on information processing theory. The whole methodology of doing organization design in terms of grouping structures and creating coordination mechanisms and so on and so forth is around information processing. Creating organizations that can make decisions, problem solve, and you have the right communication patterns to be able to do that. Digital technology is decentralizing information processing. It's creating information to go to parts of the organization or to different tasks that are being done. So it's changing, it's decentralizing, and it's changing the way that organizations need to be designed. The second issue is that organizations are becoming much more open systems because of digital technology. In other words, organizations fundamentally, historically, have seen themselves as kind of like pipelines. What they do is they create a product, they send the product out to the environment, and they got a sales force, and the sales force sells the product. With digital technology, that's really changing. So what's going on now is that the organization is shifting to include customers and is also in shifting to include members of the ecosystem. So the operating model, if you will, or the unit of analysis, if you will, is shifting in terms of how you design organizations. So let me go through what some of the trends are, or what some of the emerging sort of organizational models seem to be. Now, there's widespread experimentation going on all around the world. And of course, whatever organization you have, it's based on the kind of circumstances and the situation that you have. There's no model that's best for everyone, but there is trends and there is shifts both in theory and concepts and practice that we should take note of. So I'm going to review what some of those are. Some of the conceptual shifts is conceptual shifts and more feature shifts, but some of the conceptual shifts are one, the information processing issue I mentioned, the unit of analysis is shifting. So it not only involves the operating model, but it involves customers and it involves the members of the ecosystem. And we're moving more towards a open systems design. And that is very interesting because all of the areas of design, if you go to the Stanford D School, design school, for example, all of the design areas all have a user-focused design focus, except organization design. In other words, organization design, the methodology has been generally top-down. It started off with Jay's, and I've worked, you know, probably 50 projects with Jay over the years, but we always start with strategy, and then we always go down the structure. So it's a strategy structure top-down process. That's beginning to shift. The shift now is to be like other design efforts where you take a look at the customer, you take a look at the requirement, become user focused. And so at the same time, you're looking at the customer requirement, the customer experience, and the members of the ecosystem and the members of the operating model, and all of that gets designed at the same time. So you're designing the bottom of the organization. Are we out of time?
About 30 seconds, Stu.
Oh, okay. So we're designing the bottom of the organization. What's coming out of this also is the creation of dynamic capabilities, which is the same as business agility. And we should talk about that at some point, because dynamic capabilities are the new organizational capabilities that need to be built at an enterprise level. So at another time, we'll talk about that.
Great. Thank you so much for giving us a view into the future of org design. Now let's hear from Frank Iselt on the future of agility.
Hello, everybody from Switzerland. Can you hear me?
Okay. We can hear you. Wow. We're going to spotlight you too.
Okay.
People keep hopping around on the screen and I'm chasing him.
Okay. I just wait here. Yeah. Hello, everybody. So how can I talk about the future of agile? I don't know, but I'm certainly curious to see this recording in 3 years ahead of time. And I think org design and agility will merge more or less. So where I'm coming from is like being architect of many agile transformation, business transformations, my daily job, and also having some kind of community with the pioneers of future of work. And I think I see some pattern of key challenges what I'm facing. I don't think that agility will have more new ideas or concepts, maybe agile ownership. It's probably more about how you really can harvest the value of agile transformations. And I just brought you some of my thoughts. Let me just share my screen. So these are the three key challenges also for the future. So I mean, the first one is quite obvious. I think the VUCA world is there. How can we respond to crisis like COVID? I mean, quite obvious. I think on all levels, that's the new thing, not only in the management, how you can make sure that everybody is ready to become more responsive. The second one is like, I call it accelerator. So when I'm talking with top managers, so they have at least the expectation that once we embark on the agile transformation journey, probably they want to get rid of these typical reorganizations all 5 years or 3 years. So how we can embark on the final transformation or reorganization that will substitute all the traditional reorgs. And lastly, I mean, that's probably more if you're really successful in your agile transformation, people are engaged, empowered. I observe that they are really exposed, and myself also, that it's a working life out of the comfort zone, and how you can prevent burnouts, too much passion, how you can bring the safe space in there, and how you can make this all lighthearted and become this resilient organization, which is also a buzzword there. I think these are the three key challenges to really harvest the value of agile transformations. The building blocks, I mean, agility is probably all over, not only in the agile practices like in the past, the Scrum and all these methods, agile leadership, organization, budgeting is something which I hear more and more, and agile strategy. And I'll just give you three examples on an outcome. So when I look on the agile mindset and agile leadership, I think leadership has many definitions, but all over, it's you have to be a role model, right? And it's always good to start at yourself. So how can I myself be a role model for this growth mindset, living out of the comfort zone? And I realized that traditional managers had so much formal power, like hiring, firing, promotions, setting salaries. and even resource allocation. And I made good experience to really give up or exchange this formal power to influence, because once you get rid of formal power, you get more honest feedback, which thus allows you to have more honest and authentic potential for your own growth, right? Like a beautiful lady, does she know whether she's intelligent? Like a super boss, does he know whether she's doing a good job there? So at agile leadership and growth mindset is really starting with yourself. And also when you show vulnerability as a leader, I think that's the fast track to really create the safe space where people can speak up and also show vulnerability. And thus also a little bit prevent this panic zone. So I think the target is to stretch this growth zone that allows people to unleash the full potential while stepping out of the comfort zone. That's one part there. Sustainable agile transformations. I mean, you have seen the pyramids, they are flipping, falling, more circular structure. I think there's a difference between self-management, self-org, and self-direction. So self-direction really includes the working on the system part, like that you go more to a role-based setup where everybody can set up and change the responsibility of a role. People are assigned to more roles, and this assignment to different roles is more fluent. So you can imagine like the flock of birds, which is adapting it, self-adapting it continuously, thus preventing these reorganizations every 5 years. Last but not least, agile strategy. I mean, probably most of you, that's not something new. It should be a continuous process. Active participation should come from all levels there, including that you also give the proxies their decision-making power. And I think it really becomes more impactful if you connect agile strategy with purpose, and you get also the passion of the people. And for agile budgeting, I put in the link there from Bill Anderson from Roche Pharmaceuticals. He was talking about budgeting. I think he's quite a pioneer about agile budgeting. And I hope I kept in time, Jardena.
Oh, you're ahead of time, Frank. That's great.
Oh, I'm ahead of time. Okay.
But we'll hear from you again at the panel. Thank you so much for that on what we can see in the future of agile. The harvesting of what's already there, I think, is brilliant. And also this, the building of resilience is a hot topic nowadays. I get at least 5 emails a day about resilience, building resiliency. So thank you. Okay, now I know you all wanted those talks to go on all day, and you probably want to go deeper with each of those things, but we get to hear from the speakers again because we're going to have a panel. So we'll bring all the speakers back. And I just want to mention before we talk about the panel, this was our experiment. It moved fast to get the community together. So please, if you leave early, I wanna make sure Tanya will be posting and also sending a link to a Google form to get your feedback about what we do next. So, your input is really welcomed, everybody. So please fill in that form because it's gonna drive where this community goes. So I'll say that again at the end, but in case we lose some people, let's just wanna make sure to get it out there. All right, panel. Nice to see you all. Do we have everybody here? Okay, we're getting everybody. Good.
Just about.
Well, let's start.
Do some of this. For so long.
Okay, let's
take
do.
A couple of minutes.
Thank you, Diana. Yeah. Let's do a little exercise. Let's do a little, a little energizer here. So I'd like to, we have about maybe 12 minutes to talk to each other. Let's start just going around. I'd love to get one sentence from each of you on one sentence that you heard from another speaker that you either learned something or were surprised. So I'm going to go randomly how you're on my screen. So Stu, why don't we start with you?
One thing I heard from another speaker
that you either learned or were surprised by.
Yeah, all in all, when you hear everybody talk, I think the issue is that you have organization design and you have agile in two parallel universes, and they're not integrated. And you have organization design that has a whole methodology and sees the world in one way, and agile sees the world, and you're trying to kind of put these together. And to this point, it hasn't been integrated. That's really the next step that needs to occur.
Yeah, thank you, Stu. And that's what we're here for. So if you agree with what Stu said, you're in the right place. So when we get to that last stage where we can create new possibilities together, that's where it is. All right, Jonathan, one thing you heard that you either learned or were surprised by.
I thought it was interesting when I think it was Peter was talking about, and it's probably a similar theme of what we just heard too, of how sometimes Agile can be used as a methods as a substitute for structure when really, you know, they might actually be one in the same. So that's something that kind of made me kind of perk up a little bit too when that was mentioned.
Yeah, great, thank you. All right, Nuala.
Mute myself. So when Stu was talking about some of the shifts, you know, because for so long in org design, we've been more, you start with the strategy and you work from there. So thinking about kind of different starting places, I think is really interesting.
Great. Yeah, thank you. All right, Peter, what you got for us?
I thought it was listening to Nuala. I like the history of actually of how the org design elements tied through. So the Taylor, Farrell, and Weber, and how they start to integrate together. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, interesting how it evolved, right, to get to where we are. All right, Diane, how about you?
Oh, and poor old Mary Parker Follett never gets her due. But anyway, I was interested in some of the things that Frank was talking about in terms of the future and noting that there are other streams like the beyond budgeting, the new ways of thinking about finance and budgeting and other parts of the organization. You know, I think even Agile and org design aren't the only streams that are heading in the same direction. And I was glad to see some of those things start to pop out in the discussions of the future.
Thank you. And Mary Parker Follett, maybe we'll talk about her later because I just learned about this thought leader just a couple of weeks ago. So a whole new world has opened up for me. All right, Frank, how about you?
I'm surprised when Diana was talking about the past or the roots of agility, how far they go back. So yeah, one sentence.
Great, yeah, thank you. Okay, so we did have a few questions that came up in the chat while you all were talking. Some of them got answered in the chat, but maybe we talk about them here for a minute. But I think one that I don't know if it was answered or not, but it wasn't when I was looking, was a question directed at Stu. So Stu, do you have data on the delineation between transformation and digital optimization? I'm seeing the label transformation that is focused on incremental adaptation without fundamental command and control models changing. So thoughts on that, the difference between—
Yeah, I think organizations are ambidextrous organizations. So in other words, parts of the organization have to be designed for optimization and parts of the organization have to be designed for high uncertainty and high flexibility. So, you know, in the design process, you have to figure out what areas are going to be more agile, what areas are going to be more standardized, and the work has to be organized that way. Mm. So that would be my answer.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, either way, you're trying to create that creative tension between those two. There is no resilience, there's no way forward. Than what Stu just described. And I think that's really important to keep in mind.
And Diana, the one thing I would add, and I mean, I keep going back to this and I can't stress it more, is that digital technology is progressing at lightning speed. So processes, you know, the idea of organizing now, it's around organizing around process, organizing around material and information flows. And it goes beyond that, of course, but when you start taking a look at that, you realize that a lot of the routine work and standardized work is going to be done through digital technology, all of the discretionary work and all the flexible and work that has a lot of uncertainty is going to be done through kind of agile type of self-managing structures. And those structures are going to be pervasive throughout the enterprise.
Yeah, I think that's great. Thank you. That was a big aha for me. Was we used to organize, somebody had said it like this to me when I first got into Agile. We used to organize based assuming that we knew everything. And now we organize assuming we don't know everything, right? That's how we shift it. Any other comments on that from any of the other speakers? So another question that there was some discussion in the chat, but let's bring it up here. A question came up for you, Peter. I think you answered it. But is Agile only for software?
I think we point back at the manifesto for Agile, you know, which talks about specifically for software development. What, you know, I think, and Diane touched upon this, is we had, you know, a bunch of people who are experts in their own field with lots and lots of expertise with successful methods in their own right. And they asked what was common around all these elements. And of course, the human element was incredibly common, which is why it comes through very strongly. There's obviously a process element and things like that and how that works, right? I appreciate that lots of people are writing agile manifestos and of sorts, tying to any sort of function and group. But I think I made it in the comment, I think a lot of people ignore the level of research and the level of genuine world-class expertise these people had to argue to come up with these core themes, which is why they seem so universal. So sure, I get I can make an agile manifesto, and I'm in from Melbourne, agile manifesto for coffee making. And I saw an agile cafe manager the other day, but that doesn't make it right, and nor does it make it helpful, right? So is agile used to marketing? Well, I point again, when you've gone from, you know, small number of experts and now you've got millions of people with certificates who now claim to be experts, of course you're going to drive lots of small business and lots of marketing. So has agile moved? Yeah, it has. Does it focus on humans and making humans, you know, work together better, delivering stuff of value to their customers? Yes. Is it applicable beyond, over and above of software delivery? Absolutely is. Is it an excuse just to rebrand what poor management is? Perhaps. If I talked to our OD friends and I said, hey, we're talking about, we've got, you know, 10 layers in the business. We want to reduce the layers and we're looking at span of control and we've got to talk about, you know, cognitive load and workflow. This is right up the alleyway of the OD folk, right? I mean, I think that's what I've heard, right? Around the design element. So I think that lots of people are using Agile as a branding exercise and sort of losing the heart of what the intent was, right?
Yeah. Good point, Peter. So a question, thank you so much for that. A question just came in on the chat and we just have a few minutes left, but I would love to have a few of you weigh in on this. It says, can we hear about application? Examples of where we see Agile plus org design producing great business results. So maybe a couple of the speakers want to speak to that.
I can speak to, even just recently, I was working with a CPG that had been organized really by sectors, and each of their sectors had their own way of working. And it was very, they had their own portfolio of work. But what they did is they set up a new digital products and services unit that also had data and analytics and established the product management. So with product management, they also brought in agile coaches to start to train the business and to set up individuals to do agile ways of working there. And then in tandem with that, we started to also say, well, what do we need to do from an org design perspective to really move this from a geography-based system to more of a product-based system, and also moving it from project to product as well. So there's going to be structure and roles and accountabilities that are going to need to change, as well as being able to empower those product teams to have their own P&Ls, managing their own backlogs of what they think needs to be delivered, as opposed to it being more coming down from a PMO group.
Yeah, good point. Frank?
There's thoughts about agile transformations. I think that was a comment in there. Actually, there's no agile transformation, and there's a business transformation, and there's no end. Even the companies want to box it. I think some limitations of abusing the word agility and applying agility is like, agility is not for everything. And I've seen, like, I made good experience to use the Kanevan model, like differentiate between complicated, simple, and complex, and really apply this agility more to the more complex world, and everything which was complicated, where problem solving techniques are in place, maybe don't go for agility in every place. And I think that's one of the first points when you mix org design agility to really get clarity about limitations of agility. And this helps also to prevent this buzzword agility coming into a negative light. And because I've seen many companies where they applied agility for everything, and then agility was like a burnt word afterwards, which is, I think, unfair to agility itself, right? So, and I think that comes together. I mean, when you think about people or human as resource or human with resources, it's probably more a complex field. So I think it's quite good to blend agile mindset with some work together with people and org design, because that's always complex. You never can predict how people behave and all this stuff. So
I think there's huge benefit bringing the two together. I think if you think about agiles and you think about the way of working and, you know, unlocking delivery and things like that, if you think about it as a system, in many regards, the organizational boundaries are the constraints, right? But designing in isolation without recognizing the people that are doing the work and the type of work doesn't make sense. We all know this. So setting the right organizational design settings, it allows or biases groups to do different things and enables it to do different things. So it's almost like an iterative approach where if you shift some of the settings, then that'll then allow different sets of behaviors to emerge. And this is where it starts to play together. And if you look towards where the future is, where Stu and Frank are talking about, if it's about reforming and swarming groups and teams across customer imperatives that are the late and breaking at speed, the org design has to enable that, but you need the agile and the ways of working and things to be able to then, you know, drive the response to the customer stimulus, right? So the two pieces have to enable and play off each other and ideally amplify each other.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about that. I think there's a number of different kinds of work, and some of the work it's the reason why the Agile Manifesto was developed by software developers. Right? That is a very particular kind of work. And I think that, I mean, Peter Drucker made the distinguishing between knowledge work and not knowledge work way back, right? I think that we have moved beyond that. I think there are still both of those kinds of work, but now there's also learning work. There's work where you can't rely on the past knowledge that you've been, you know, you can't just sit on that and expect that to serve you. You've got to be out there constantly learning about what's emerging, constantly learning about how to put those things together, constantly learning about the impacts of those things, and so on and so forth. And for software developers, it's the code. They've got to constantly be learning about how the code is changing. As they build more code, it all changes and morphs. And so when we think about those different kinds of work, I think we come back to what Stu said about, you know, the ambidextrous organizations. It's like, what kind of work is happening where? And what kind of organization design do we need for that kind of work?
Right.
And engaging the people who are doing that kind of work in the design, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Can I jump in here just for one thing?
Sure.
Yeah, I think there's a wild card here. And you have these organization design and agility, and agile creates software. But what does the software create? The software is creating these digital capabilities. And the wild card is, what is the impact of digital technology on agile? And what is the impact of digital technology on organization design? And if you look what digital technology is doing when it's used inside an organization, in terms of providing information to people, it changes fundamentally how you think about organization design. You know, if you got a geography system and you got a central P&L, you can look at the interdependencies around that and integrate that. You know, there's lots of things that are going to change. But the major thing is that the speed is going to increase, the learning requirements are going to increase, and the agile type design is probably going to be much more prolific in a flatter structure that's going to be, you know, designed like startups, designed as highly flexible, high learning work units.
So thank you, Stu. That's insightful. So I'm going to stop us. We're at the top of the hour. Thank you all for hanging in there with us. A couple of thank yous. Thank you to the Org Design Forum folks for making this happen so fast. Tanya, thank you especially for getting everything in place. Thank you for the Business Agility folks for getting this also in place. Thank you to all you speakers for preparing a wonderful talk on really short notice during the summer. And thank you all for coming. We really are looking forward to keeping this community going and building it and creating from it. Where Tanya has put the Google Forum in the chat. Your feedback is going to shape the future. So please give us your feedback and stay tuned for more more events for this group and building this community. And thank you for being part of the very first initial meeting of this community.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Jardina, thank you for hosting today. We appreciate you guiding everything.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jardina.
Pleasure. My pleasure. And there was a ton of great stuff in the chat that we didn't get to. I'm saving it. So don't think it is lost.